This episode of How to Kill an Hour is brought to you by Microsoft Surface. And Microsoft very kindly sent us over the new Surface Pro, and I've used it to make this podcast, this very podcast you are listening to right now.
Are you serious?
Hello, there's plenty of ways to kill some time out there. Right now, you were killing some time with I, Marcus Bronzy.
And me, Funk Butcher.
Usually, Funk, we kick off the show talking about what activities, apps, stuff we've been killing time with, right?
Yeah.
So the thing I've killed time with this week has been the Microsoft Surface Pro. So should we just kick it off from there? Kind of like makes sense.
Right? Let's do it.
I've whipped it out because you've not seen this yet, have
pause,
you? I whipped it out in the studio and I was waving it all around and it caught everyone's eye. But no.
Decent exposure.
So I've had my hands on it for like just over a week and I literally just thought, if I'm going to get my hands on something, let me just immerse myself in it so I can give the full like spectrum of how it works. Mm-hmm. So
just to clarify, what's it called?
The Microsoft Surface Pro. Okay. That's what it is. Because there's a few other Surfaces out. This is the Surface Pro. There's like numbers, like 1, 2, 3, 4. This is the Surface Pro.
Okay.
So it's designed for people who are creative mobile professionals.
Can I just raise my hand? I'm one of those.
Are you creative?
Yeah.
Are you mobile?
Yeah.
Are you a pro?
Yeah.
Fesh?
Yeah.
Oh, now?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's who it's made for.
I'm not an intermediate level. I'm not a beginner.
You're not even that creative. What would you call someone who's not that creative? A dull, unmobile professional. It's someone that doesn't move anywhere, isn't very creative and not professional.
I was going to call him a loser.
Well, yes, it's designed for us. So it's designed for people that are like on the go. Mm-hmm. So
the Jedi Knights of the creative world.
Yeah. I mean, it literally just came out on June the 15th. So it's not been out for that long. Mm-hmm. I'd call us that, though. We're on the go.
Mm-hmm.
We're killing time in different places. We like to maintain our professionalism.
Mm-hmm.
Managed to do a little excursion to Europe, which we'll be able to talk about in a few episodes time as well.
But you know what? I feel quite a few people fall into that remit due to the fast pace of life. Especially in London, I think a lot of us are on the go and having to do work in multiple areas.
Yeah.
I mean, they need to just, like you said, whip it out.
Whip it out in a coffee shop, usually, is the usual place you'll see it. See, that's what I think the people that used to just sit in coffee shops and do their work, they never had a name before.
No.
People that worked on the go, on the train, on their commute, they didn't have a name before.
No.
We now have a name.
Yeah.
Creative mobile professional, CMPs. Just a CMP, baby. What do you do for a living? I'm a CMP.
You down with CMP? Yeah, you know me.
There you go. So what? What does it do? It's got three modes. It transforms from PC to tablet and also studio mode. So PC mode is like, looks like a laptop.
Yeah. Okay.
Tablet mode is where you rip the keyboard off
and
it stands by itself. Yeah. Tablet. And the third mode is studio mode where it's got a hinge on the back of it, which you can use to, for example, when it's in tablet mode, prop it up. Mm-hmm. Or when it's in laptop mode, prop it up so the screen faces you.
Mm-hmm.
But the hinge bends all the way around to like a ridiculous angle and you can almost have it flat. So it's kind of like
an easel.
It can easy. Yeah. Like an easel, like the perfect angle for you to kind of draw, write on, sketch on and be creative.
Get your Da Vinci on.
Yeah. Get my Da Vinci on. And they've got all of the sort of good bits inside that you get in sort of high spec laptops. So this has got like the i7 Intel processor, which is what I use on my regular laptop anyway.
Jeez. I've got the power.
I've got the power. So that's kind of all like, this is all the spiel that you get of it, you know, create, study, work and play virtually anywhere. High resolution, touchscreen. Oh, it's touchscreen as well, by the way.
Yes.
And up to 13.5 hours of battery life in optimum conditions. So that's all the spiel about it, right? Mm-hmm. So it sounds cool. I bet it sounds cool to you listening.
Yeah.
But like Funk said, we've actually got one here in the studio with us because today's show it's going to be edited on it. And just talk us through what you think of the look of it, Funk. Or can you explain what you're seeing right now in front of you on the table?
It looks brand spanking fresh. I mean, the chrome design in the back, it's got a very neat, very, do you know what it is as well? It's very thin. It's very unassuming.
8.5 millimeters thick.
You want to tell that to your lady when you take a moment from a night. That's no stats that you would want to give to the lady at the end of a Tinder date, but it's very impressive in the computer world.
In the laptop world, you want to be bragging about
That's some impressive stats.
8.5 millimeters. Yeah. So yes, that it weighs about 800 grams as well, which is it's light.
But as I was just about to say, it looks very unassuming. It doesn't look like it's got that much power. It looks like a very, if anything, basic bit of kit. When you just read to me the specs, I wasn't assuming that it can go toe-to-toe with some of the best laptops out there in the game.
So yeah, were you surprised when you heard the specifications?
Yeah, the specifications.
Specifications,
yeah. I was very, very surprised.
Shall I hit you with some more for the nerds?
Yeah, go on.
Hit you with some more for the nerds. 13.5 hours battery life, already said that. Yeah. Intel Core i7, already said that. Uh-huh. 16 gigabytes of RAM, which is basically 16 gigabytes of RAM is good for if you're editing high HD video or big audio projects.
Yeah.
That's what it's good for. If you don't need that level of juice, you can spec it down and get a less dear price. Mm-hmm. Check this though, Funk. It's fanless. It's not got a conventional fan system. So it's got this kind of cooling system, which you would have seen in tablets before, because you know tablets don't whir when you're working with them. And it's got this cooling system that doesn't like go when you're doing loads of work. Touch screen, weighs less than a kilogram. It's got a USB port.
Oh, no. Really? Mm. Yeah, I'm sold.
Mm, look at that on the right. Yeah,
I'm
sold. Mr. Cook.
I'm sold.
a micro SD card port.
Hallelujah.
Which means you can, you know, transfer data from any device that takes a micro SD card port. Or if you're someone that uses cameras and stuff like that, you can, there's ways for you to basically get data off without having to plug your camera in. And
you see, this is very interesting because what is this product called?
Surface Pro.
And who is it made for? Creative
mobile professionals.
Yeah. And what they've done is put exactly what these people need.
Exactly.
Whereas we actually have another what's it called, laptop on the market, which is supposed to be dedicated to that same section of the computing world, and they've left out those things.
They disrespected us.
That's very interesting.
I felt very disrespected. So it's good for Microsoft to come along and just say, like, listen, this is what you need. This is what you can get. It's got the mini display port as well, so you can plug it into a bigger screen.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, all right, I'm editing video now. I don't just want to look at a smaller screen or look at a big screen.
You know what I felt Microsoft were like? Microsoft were like that guy that came along to you at a train station when you're crying, and they put their jacket around you and said, hey, baby, I'm listening to you. Tell me what you need. You want USB? I got that.
Yeah, so it's got, man. So, yeah, it's tidy.
Well done, Microsoft, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and even the finish as well. So, like, I've just ripped off the off the keyboards because it's one that you connect to it. And it's made out of this stuff called Alcantara.
Feels like felt.
Feel the Alcantara first. Yeah. Tell me what that feels like, please.
Alcantara. Sounds like a British, a Spanish holiday resort that the Brits go to.
I didn't know what Alcantara was. Do you know what Alcantara is? I've Googled it. Did you know what Alcantara was?
Is it next to Lanzarote?
It's it's composed of 68% polyester and 32% polyurethane.
So that's why it feels fabric-y.
It's got increased durability and stain resistance. Similar to suede. Might be identified as suede, but it's basically much more durable.
Yeah.
So,
I mean,
you know, if you I'm not saying drop a coffee on your keyboard, but if you did.
Literally, the best way of describing it to someone who hasn't yet felt it is that it does feel like suede. It looks, it's actually blue, like blue suede shoes.
They should make shoes out of that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind shoes in that color. So yeah, it's got the keyboard. Let me just snap it on. Listen, it makes such a cool noise. Listen.
It's got a little stand at the back of the screen as well.
Yeah, which is great. Like, and then so basically, I don't remember the actual degrees that you can bend the stand back to, but you can put it in this surface mode, which allows you to draw on it like an easel, like you said. So it gives you loads of sort of, I don't know, it just gives you flexibility. This keyboard doubles up as a screen protector as well. It looks kind of businessy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, and on the charger for it, which I haven't got in today because the battery life is actually all right. The charger's got a USB port on it just so you can charge up.
What?
You notice those little touches? Hey, man, I got a USB port.
As well?
My charger. As well? Come with me if you don't want if you don't want your manager standing in the background of your music video rubbing their hands. Come with me.
ambassador with all these plugins. You are really spoiling us. Yeah. It's like a Ferrero Rocher advert.
It is a Ferrero Rocher advert. So
excellente. And I'm telling you, hand on heart, as an Apple boy for over 10 years, which is a very long time, I'm looking at this with loving, longing eyes. I actually want one.
You want one?
I actually want one.
Hey, if you're listening, could do with another one. A nice i7 spec.
Another one.
Oh yeah, you can get like the terabyte hard drive and that in this little baby as well. Yeah. So it's got the storage space as well, which I always recommend. Like if you are serious about this creative mobile professional, people say, oh, don't have a big hard drive. I say, listen, get a big hard drive. you don't need one. Get the hard drive. Because then when someone goes, hey, I've got 100 gigs of footage that I just need to give you and you're going to transport it somewhere and you haven't got a memory stick, guess what? You're sorted. Remember the other day when Billy had that footage?
Yeah.
And Billy was like, we did some filming in Brussels and Billy was like, Marcus, I've got some footage from today, but I don't think your memory stick can take it. I was like,
ooh, firing shots.
I said, please, Billy, take this 256 gigabyte memory stick, and then let me put this data onto my 1 terabyte hard drive, all right? But
that's how they throw shade in the creative mobile professional world.
How big's your hard drive? Is it fanless though? So setting up was kind of easy. Cortana, that's their smart assistant.
Yeah.
Kind of talks you through it. So from the start, it's like, would you like to do this? And you're like, yes. No, that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not necessary.
Yeah.
It uses this thing called Windows Hello as well, where how it works is when you open up the laptop or in laptop mode, and when you turn on the tablet, whatever mode it's in, it's got a little camera on it and it does a bit of facial recognition. So, you know, like on smartphones, you use your thumbprint.
Yeah,
this uses facial recognition and goes, oh, this is you, unlock. So you can literally press it, unlock it, open it. And it's really, it's very interesting. And, it's just Windows runs nicely on it, Windows 10. And it comes with a couple of extra bits as well. I'm not done yet. We've got more.
Yeah. So it's got like a stylus.
What this is a stylus, but it's a bit more than that. They call it the pen. Yeah. Because you can draw with it like a pen. So, you know, like when you hold a pen directly down on paper, it's sharp. Mm-hmm. And then when you put it on its side, it shades. You can do that. So it's
actively reflecting the different pressure points that you would use. Say if you are like a more of an artistic creative, you don't need to, clearly you don't need to buy an additional stylus. This one comes with a stylus.
Yeah.
And you can...
I think you might have to buy it on the side.
Okay.
But you can get one though. Mm-hmm. And it's like you said, pressure, 4,000 levels of pressure on the pen that it can work out. So there's like quite, a heavy handed bit and
incredible
and less. And there's got this Microsoft Ink workspace where you can adjust its settings and get arty in a Sketchpad app as well.
Yeah.
Let me show you something that I knocked together on the Sketchpad earlier. That was me being a bit arty.
Do you know what? Yeah, that's not... I was expecting some stick men. That's not bad. That is not too shabby. You didn't do that.
No, it's the one that came with it.
I knew it.
It's the card. That's who you know. Gosh. There's a very good example of computers and windmills. My version is I'm not the best drawer, all right? So, if you want stick men, they got the roundest heads. Yeah, and they got the straightest fingers, my stick men. I kind of use it just to take notes, really. And you can use it for that as well. So, like, they've got this program called OneNote.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like your one-stop shop for all your ideas. So you can be out and about, take a picture of something that inspires you, draw a circle around it, write some notes, and it just keeps it all in one place. You can access it anywhere. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of one use for the phone, for the pen, like using it to take down your notes. And then also you could be creative and draw stuff or annotate. I'd probably be more on the annotate side of things because, as you've just said, my drawing's a little bit poo. and it also comes with this dial as well.
Yeah, that looks interesting.
So, by the way, the pen, you can use it as a mouse as well. Like, you can pick stuff up, like, and move it around. So you can use it. I'm an Adobe Suite kind of guy.
Yeah.
A Creative Suite kind of guy. So, yeah, I used it with Adobe Creative Suite. And I also use this dial as well. Now, the dial, I call it a knob in front of all the people from Microsoft, and they didn't like that. So we're not going to call it that anymore. But the dial is like a little Bluetooth dial.
It's a dial, Marcus.
It's a dial. What a knob. Hey. So yeah, it also comes with this thing called a Microsoft dial, which you pair via Bluetooth. It runs on AAA batteries that come with it. And you can either use it off the screen, like put it on the side next to you. It's like a dial which you turn left, right, or you can click once or hold a click and it gives you haptic feedback.
Yeah.
Or you can pop it onto the screen and it'll actually, depending on the program you're using, it will actually work on the screen
way.
And pick up where it is.
Oh, that is amazing.
So if you hold down, for example, you can see the menu is around it as well. Now,
so it's like, it's a cylindrical dial. It's probably about 2 inches in height.
Yeah.
And
what's his girth?
It's girth, I'd say it's about, what's that, 4 inches across?
I don't know. I'd call it an inch. I'd call it an inch tall and two wide.
Yeah.
I think, you know, or centimeters, it's about 4 centimeters.
Yeah, 4 centimeters. So,
and a couple across. Of centimeters. Yeah, there you go. You got your centimeters and inches mixed up. Hey.
Oh, that's what I was telling him.
So yeah, it comes, so basically you can use it off the screen and it's one of those things where you look at it and you think, that's really? Mm-hmm. Now, when I looked at it, I was like, the pen, the dial, I was like, I wasn't too sure. But what I did was, is you can actually go into the settings. This is why I'm glad I got a little bit of time with it, because if you spend a day with products like this, you don't really get into them.
Yeah.
I went into the settings and I found that you can change what gestures on the pen, like if you click the pen, because you can click the pen, you actually use the end as a rubber as well. Click the pen, you can change what it does. But with the dial, you can give it different settings. So, for example, in Premiere, I went into the settings and added Premiere, the app, in the settings for the dial. So it said, right, what do you want to do in Premiere? And I gave it a set of gestures, which meant when I scrolled right, it went forward a frame, and when I went left, it went back a frame. Now, that's really important for when you're doing video editing or when you're doing audio editing, going forward a millisecond or a second and back a second, a millisecond. Because
it helps your workflow.
It just helps your workflow. Yeah, because, yeah, you can use a keyboard shortcut to go forward a few frames or back a few frames. But what if you can just roll forward or roll back?
Yeah.
And I also set it, the touch, so that when I touched, when I tapped on the dial, it zoomed in on a specific area that I had highlighted. And
I know it sounds really silly for people who aren't creative mobile professionals out there, but things like that, cutting down that little half a second of going to the laptop and typing in the command or dragging the mouse across, having something which is kind of like a manual, a manual motion, it does save time collectively.
100%. And like you can, and with the dial, you can get to do loads of things. So volume, like right now I've got volumes, I can scroll, so you can just read something.
Yeah.
Like I can just be reading something. Like you could be reading a paper online, you can just scroll. It's just a nice tool. And I think having a dial and the pen could really change the workflow.
That's a very nice touch,
when you're working in, because Funk, you work with production programs as well, like high-end digital audio workstations. Workflow's good. But also, I think, you know, maybe getting your Microsoft Word, a little undo, going back a little bit, just browsing web pages. It's nice. So I really, really like that. And what else? You know, the Microsoft Surface Pro has kind of promised itself as a powerful, portable product. I feel like that's what they're saying to us. Do you think it wins on that front?
I think it wins hands down. Seriously.
Yeah.
I mean, because they've created something and clearly they seem to have listened to all the gripes of creative media professionals across all spectrums, music, creative design, all of them, all the platforms. And there seems to be something for everyone. When you're looking at the stylus, when you're looking at the dial, not the knob, and you can see that they've tried on every single level to improve the workflow of those types of people.
Yeah. And we've just spoken about the laptop use of it. So when I pull off the keyboard, because you know you can download apps from the Windows App Store.
Yeah.
So the Windows Store, you open it up and you can download, for example, a Netflix app. And when you pull off the keyboard and open Netflix, it acts as if it's a pad, like a tablet.
Mm.
So it's like it does the job. Usually you'd need two products to kind of get that experience, like, you know, a tablet and a laptop. But it kind of just moves seamlessly between those two.
Yeah.
And I'm impressed, man. So it's good for being creative, but it's also good for a bit of R&R, I feel, as well. Like, you know, you can relax with it. And that means that if we're going on a trip and I have to pack a tablet and a laptop, pack this. And it does everything that it needs to do.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I think this is a very interesting mark of intent for Microsoft. We've always been, in my opinion, a software-based company. I think this is something which makes them kind of puff up their chest and say, look, yeah, we can do hardware like the other cats in the game to a higher standard as well.
Yeah.
And for me, when I look at it, I can see this being used not only by creative mobile professionals, also children on the upper end of the age spectrum, maybe like towards their teens, people at university and so forth. So
as a uni device, hell yes.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and let's not discredit kids, like young people are now, they are creative and they're mobile and they're professional as ever at a young age. You know what I mean? Like,
I just didn't want to give the whole a professional term. I didn't want to kind of like put it into a bracket of people that were on the upper end, earning a certain bracket of money or in a certain job spectrum. Professional in the sense of you take your game seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like us.
Exactly.
Yeah, me. We spit our game. Yeah, me.
Sometimes.
Anyway, that's how I've been killing some time. How have you been killing some time recently?
Well, I've been venturing to the big screen, the cinema, over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Went to see two films. But aside from that, also, I want to talk about something new which came out on Netflix that I also saw as well.
Yeah, go on.
The first two films that I saw were War for the Planet of the Apes, which I believe is the third film of the most recent remake of the trilogies. Obviously, I know there's loads of the Planet of the Apes franchise, within the Planet of the Apes franchise, obviously with the classic starring Charlton Heston. This film concludes the story of Caesar, kind of thing. I don't want to give too much away, but it kind of, you're going from, I think it's the Rise of the Planet of the Apes to, what's the one just before that?
More of the Planet of the Apes.
I think something like Battle.
More of the Planet of the Apes.
And then there's War.
Yeah.
War's the last one.
Okay. Sorry, I'm really bad because they're not my favourite.
Really? You should give them a shot.
I've given the first two a shot.
Which ones? The old classic ones?
No. I've watched the old classic ones on TV.
Yeah.
And the movies. Uh-huh. And then you find out what happens at the end.
Yeah.
And then I watched the one with Mark Wahlberg. Because that was a reboot that they binned that, didn't they? Yeah.
That's the one where, with Helena Bonham Carter. And she looked like Michael Jackson.
Yeah. Were you the only one? I thought I was the only one that saw it. I saw her and she was like,
that's why I like that one. So anyway, War the Planet.
Sorry.
War the Planet of the Apes.
Sorry, it was Rise, Dawn, and This is War.
Okay. Rise, Dawn, and War. Okay. What did I say? Battle. So you've got War of the Planet of the Apes, which kind of concludes the story of the main, what they call it? Not marsupials, what are they?
They're gorillas. No, they're a combination of the apes.
Yeah, what's the term for them?
Apes.
No, there's another term for them.
What, for apes?
Yeah, collectively what they're known as.
Apes.
No, there's another term.
Marsupial, that's kangaroos.
Yeah, it's not marsupials.
Apes, collective term. I'm not Googling, I promise.
Okay.
Really? What's a collective term for apes? Homo something? No, that's us, Homo sapiens. You thought that was a blunder there?
Yeah, for sure.
No. I don't know. Apes? I don't know what they're called.
It's going to come back to me later on.
But I'll tell you what, a group of them is called a troop, though. I didn't know that.
Really?
You know that? A troop
of apes.
Yeah.
Interesting. So it concludes the story of the main protagonist, Caesar, which a lot of people have kind of grown fond of because of his... I guess he has a lot of human qualities that they've put into his character, i.e. the human quality of revolting. Yeah. That's something that we've done over history, years and years of centuries. Humans always get to a stage where they're fed up of the government, of the status quo, of the institutions, and they rise up in the dawn so that there's a war. That's the best way I tried to link the three films together. But let's get onto the film. The film aesthetically is amazing.
Yeah.
Again, they're pushing the boundaries of the whole CGI and the kind of blue screen, green screen.
Yeah, green screen. They use blue and green, and they use motion tracking.
Yeah.
Because I actually went to the studio. They do that, you know.
Really?
Yeah, Imaginarium, West London. I actually got to play with that stuff.
It's incredible. So, to think that back in the day, we were watching films with stop motion. When you had the old Sinbad films, and that was the level of.
And was the other one King Kong?
Yeah,
and Godzilla.
So you had,
it looked like your plasticine was fighting.
Exactly. Yeah. So you had King Kong, Godzilla, Clash of the Titans, all those kind of classic titles where they used to. That was the
cutting edge technology,
and this is where we're at now.
Mm.
It looks seamless where you saw the apes riding horses. It was just like, that's just so strange. Like, you wouldn't even imagine that at a circus kind of thing, but to see it on screen. So you obviously kind of get drawn into that aesthetically, how amazing it is, which leaves you, not all the time, but you're kind of forgiven of the actual storyline itself. You're not demanding as much from the story because you're so kind of captivated by the way it looks. The storyline has so much potential. I'd say for me, it kind of is a bit tepid on the final.
Really?
The final third, yeah. And I bumped into Ace. Shout out to Ace. He was also there at the premiere.
Yeah.
And he bumped into the men's area. Pause. As you do. Yeah, there was a massive queue outside the men's. It's quite a long film.
How long is it?
It felt like it was knocking on the 3-hour mark.
Oh man.
Yeah, it felt like that.
Oh man. Sorry. Wow.
I just felt with the kind of the main baddie in there, which is played by Woody Harrelson, they could have really pushed a kind of extra really demonic edge on him, but they didn't. I don't know if that's on a case of the script or whether it was bad casting. Maybe they could have got someone who could have played someone a little bit more evil, and that could have maybe pushed the final third to a big crescendo.
He's a great actor, though.
He is a great actor. But maybe in that case, then, in his defense, it would have been the script where it didn't allow him to develop the kind of wickedness you would expect from someone who was going around killing members of his own team, killing these apes for no reason. So,
wow, really telling the whole story there. really saving bits of the plot.
You've seen Planet of the Apes, you know what happens anyway. You know that they're probably going to survive at the end of it. But there is a lot of unexpected parts of the film. So I haven't actually kind of spoiled it for everyone.
And if you look at the poster for the film, the picture has, when you look at it from afar, it looks like there are a group of apes, which is their collective term. I don't know why you thought it was something. I don't know. Maybe there is something. I'm stupid. But probably is. It looks like there's a bunch of humans facing a bunch of apes. But when you look carefully, there's a bunch of apes facing a bunch of humans and apes.
Mm-hmm.
Am I right? Is that something? Yeah. Should I read into that?
I mean, that's like, at the end of the day, if I spoke about that, that wouldn't be spoiling it either. But that there's a strong kind of message, or that is kind of being reflected throughout history, which is kind of substituted within this film using apes.
Okay.
So you feel like you're watching a film, a fictional tale, which feels very, very familiar.
Right. Okay.
Which kind of made people within the audience feel quite uneasy.
Right.
Mm. So I did have a glance around and I saw that, yeah, there's a kind of a strong, I think you pronounce it, allegory that's running through this film that seemed a little bit like deja vu.
Right.
Yeah. Which are very clever, it seems to be the way nowadays that you get the message across. You change the subjects in the film, and like Zootopia, for one, that was another film where they kind of touched on the whole segregation and whatnot is currently going on, and they put cartoon animals in there. So with this, you do kind of get that feeling, but like history has a sense of being very wicked in its outcomes, and I really felt like the film was going to mirror that, but I guess they had to kind of balance the audience
right?
And the kind of the box office, they didn't really want to have it.
Is this what let it down for you then?
Yeah, because I felt like it had the potential to be a great. Do you know what it is? When you look at films like Deadpool and Ryan Reynolds, who we're going to talk about soon, he's in the next film that we saw. He wouldn't do Deadpool unless it was in its R-rated form. Same with Logan. Logan was
such a great film.
Logan, the last Wolverine film, there was, I think, explicitly Hugh Jackman said to the studios that it had to be R-rated because that was the true representation of how the comic book character was.
Yeah.
So, the Planet of the Apes is which is in comic book form as well. They depict those apes doing some real, real deep stuff.
Okay.
And obviously, because it's such a blockbuster, because it's a summer blockbuster hit, it has an obligation to catch the widest demographic of the cinema viewing public. So I feel like it made some compromises on that part of the storyline.
Okay, so then out of five, like taking that sort of unfulfilled area of greatness that they could have filled in for you.
Yeah.
What does that do to your final out of five score for that film?
Well, I'm gonna
because we do out of fives for films quite a lot.
Yeah.
Not for anything else, because I just feel like it works better.
Yeah.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
Well, I'm gonna measure it in the same way that I measured Batman versus Superman, which you didn't like, which I felt like he done very well considering the compromise he had to make in putting this universe together in a short space of time, but having the pressure of still having to get bums on seats in the cinemas, which is what Planet of the Apes, War of the Planet of the Apes had to do. So I could see that you can actually spot the shift whereby the point in the film where it's just like, okay, let's make it commercial now. There's actually a point where you're watching the film and it's like, this is good. This is really good. This is dark. Okay, now this is the popcorn and this is the popcorn part.
Right.
So in me noticing that, I'd give it a 4.5 out of 5.
Okay. Still quite generous. I thought you might hear a bit harder than that, but no. Okay, cool. All right. So you said you also saw Hitman's Bodyguard.
Yes.
I'm so jealous. I was jealous of Planet of the Apes. Couldn't get to that.
Yeah.
And then Hitman's Bodyguard, I was very jealous of that because you had an interesting experience when you went down there, didn't you?
So the Hitman's Bodyguard was, I saw that not last week, the week before, went down to West End of London. Nice plush hotel in Soho. Quite a very trendy, used to have quite a seedy history back in the day, Soho.
Okay.
And not that I would know that. Disclaimer. And we was treated to a private screening, but there were some special guests there in the private screening. Alongside the Hitman's Bodyguard screening set up by Lionsgate, shouts to Lionsgate, we were joined by the stars of the film, Salma Hayek.
Right.
Looks amazing.
Is she good in real life? She does look
amazing in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And the legend that is Samuel L. Jackson.
Nah, man. Come on, man.
So after I picked my jaw up off the floor, because this guy literally is a walking interpretation of all his characters rolling into one. He is no different. He is just cool. If he fell down and hit his head on the floor, coolness would just pour out. Seriously, the guy is just like made in swag.
Oh, he's dripping in swag juice.
Dripping in swagoo.
You know what's funny? I'll go on your Instagram. Can we play the video of when the guy asks him, because they've got like the MC there, and they ask him to talk about the film. Should we just play?
Go on.
Good. So Sam and Salma, can you, for the people who haven't seen this film yet, can you give them some clue about the mayhem that's going to unfold? What can they expect from the Hitman's Bodyguard?
What the fuck are they here for?
I mean, you don't want me to tell you what the movie's about. You want to see it, right?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Please share it up. No.
The way he shut down.
Listen, I can't express how unreal it is to meet someone and they actually meet your expectations.
Yeah. And as many a time have you been let down?
Oh, yeah.
Many a time. And just so you know, if you ever meet me in Funk, your expectations will go through the roof. Because you'll be like, wow.
Woo!
Wow. Yeah. We will smash your expectations.
But this guy feels like if you ask him too many questions, he might smash you. He has his energy about him where he exudes all the characters, whether it's the guy trying to hold up McDowell's and coming to America.
Oh, yes.
Whether it's the hitman from Pulp Fiction, whether it's the like all of them rolled into one. He has a sense of you want to stand over him, but you don't want to get that motherfucker.
Yeah.
You don't want to get that. So literally, he comes in, everyone's kind of in awe. But what was a massive distraction? The guy was sitting two rows behind me watching the film. So he sat down and he watched the whole film with us. Yeah, two rows behind, and I actually had this vibe of, if I don't laugh at his jokes, I'm going to get a boot in the back of my head. Motherfucker, why are you laughing? Yeah, but the film itself, basically is about a hitman who has I don't know if this is true or not, maybe that the hitman's out there, if you're listening to How to Kill an Hour, you can verify this for us. They have different classifications. So he has a triple A grading, which allows him to look after certain high profile clients.
Okay.
I guess like heads of states and higher than celebrities and all that kind of stuff, like real, real high profile. And unfortunately he loses this status. I won't say how. And what happens from that point onwards is that his life crosses the path of Samuel Jackson's, who is a well-known, well-hunted hitman who is on the way to The Hague for his involvement in war crimes of a certain nature. He's been transported there and his convoy is attacked. And basically, the girlfriend of Ryan Reynolds asks for his help to look after him. So that's how he becomes the hitman's bodyguard.
Right.
So that's how their relationship kind of develops from that point onwards. You've got both of them are very, 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 very competent killers. So it's actually a case of Samuel Jackson doesn't need looking after, and you have the kind of the whole dynamic through the film of the banter of Samuel Jackson kind of constantly poking fun at Ryan Reynolds for even doing the job that he's doing and losing his triple A status. And aside from the action, which I felt would be a little bit on the silly side, it wasn't. The stunts are, it's probably got one of the best chase scenes I've seen in it for a long time. There's one chase scene in Amsterdam. It's up there for me in the top five in terms of the kind of the choreography.
Both Samuel L. Jackson, though, and Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
They're both
Marvel.
They're both Marvel, but they're both scene stealers in their own right.
Yeah.
Would you say like they own scenes? So how did that dynamic work with such big, big personalities?
I think it was interesting to see because when they're not in the same shot, obviously, they kind of absorb all the energy, the focus, and together they clearly have a dynamic which was similar to tennis, where one's knocking it back, the other one's knocking it back, and then they complement each other. Ryan assumes the role of the understudy, yet he is still funny. He doesn't kind of completely kind of disappear in the in the scenes with Samuel Jackson, but Samuel has a presence with everyone. Like personally in the viewing, I heard more laughs for Sam's because he was saying things which came so natural. And obviously, clearly hearing the way he talks outside of the film, you're just like, that's the way he is. He probably on the set of making the film, there were probably a lot of laughs as well. Because naturally, he just seems that kind of person as well. But the film, it seemed like an independent film in terms of the promo behind it. I didn't hear too much considering who's in it. You've got Salma Hayek, Ryan Reynolds, Samuel Jackson, and Gary Oldman.
Oh, wow.
Exactly. So I'm just like, there's some heavy hitters in here.
A lot of superhero guys in there.
A lot of,
a lot of superhero film characters in there,
So in regards to that, I thought to myself, I didn't really hear too much about this. But in terms of its delivery, yeah, the stunts and the jokes and everything were really, really, really entertaining. It doesn't take itself too seriously, which is good as well. It is one of those films where you can go out and you're not having to like really, really kind of concentrate or poke holes in it and, oh, that doesn't make sense, that doesn't make sense, because I don't think the film stresses to make itself that much of a serious film. It's not trying to put itself in the category of, I don't know, what is a serious action film these days? Some of the stunts look a bit far-fetched, but I mean, I don't know. The Mission Impossible franchise, you would say that's a serious action film. It doesn't it doesn't try to put itself in that. There are people falling from literally like 10 stories, landing on their back and rolling off and then getting in the car and then getting shot up and having no bullet holes in them whatsoever. It is one of those kind of films. So you have to take it for what it is. It literally falls into that category of the 80s Arnold Schwarzenegger films, The Commandos.
I loved it, where they got stronger and stronger. The more bullet holes that they got rifled with.
Where literally...
Yeah, the more flesh wounds they had, the stronger they got.
Yeah, like Arnold Schwarzenegger would walk into a mansion full of bodyguards and come out with just a bit of sweat.
Yeah, a bit of sweat. Or,
sweat patches.
Or Bruce Willis would start a film walking on glass.
So literally is one of those films. Well, I'd give the film out of five, say 3.5 out of 5.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Where do you think it could have improved on then?
I think if it made itself into a more serious film, in terms of maybe stripping back on the jokes a little bit more, which is obviously very hard to do with those types of characters. I don't think I've seen a Ryan Reynolds film where he hasn't actually tapped into his humour.
Yeah, he's been doing it since the Blade days. I mean, there are chick flicks out there with him in it, but...
Yeah. Nah. And I think that's...
I ain't going to watch them anyway, yeah.
And that's, I think that's a fair point. Blade is probably the serious I have seen him in, a kind of action type film.
Yeah.
Which is why Deadpool was perfect for him.
Yeah, I feel like he was playing Deadpool in Blade.
Yeah.
I feel like that was Deadpool.
Yeah.
From then, I was like, yeah, that's... He's got a kind of Deadpool essence. I think he used katanas as well, that character, in the film. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And then he actually played Deadpool, didn't he?
Yeah.
But the weird version that Marvel cooked up the first time around and then played him again. But yeah, all right, cool. So there's another film that you said, or a bit of TV, Netflix.
Yeah. So Netflix, this one is for all the retro heads out there, Nintendo lovers.
Let me log into my Netflix.
They have ported over...
Ported.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, good.
They have ported over into the visual world a classic. If you're an owner, if you're lucky enough to have owned a NES, Nintendo Entertainment System, back in the day in the 80s, or a Super Nintendo rather, you would know about the franchise Castlevania. They have put that onto Netflix, a series. It's a very short series, but visually looks incredible. And the reason why I like it as well, it really kind of taps into that level of anime, which isn't silly or cultish in a sense of like overly soft graphics and like little cute creatures. This is real 18 stuff, man. So Castlevania tells the story of Dracula. Literally. Right. And Dracula has a partner, his wife, who tries to see the good in humans. Unfortunately, she is... the humans don't see the good in her. They mistake her sorcery, as it were, which is literally just modern day medicine.
It's just modern day Instagram filters is what she uses.
So literally her... venture into medicine to help others, it kind of backfired on her, and the townsfolk of where the series is situated, they turn on her. Don't want to give too much away from her, but it gets very, very hot for her, as you can imagine. What normally befalls people who delve in witchcraft,
right?
And that makes Dracula very angry.
So I'm gonna presume this is manga style of cartoon, right?
Yeah. I mean, you can presume that, but yeah. It didn't have to be. Okay. Obviously, it could have gone any which way.
All right.
But they have, luckily, I've gone down that whole manga, serious anime route in terms of the graphic design and the artwork. Mm-hmm. So you're really getting a serious depiction of the characters.
Okay.
And
so just to confirm, because in case you're not like a super manga fan, mm-hmm. it's manga cartoon stuff, mm-hmm. but it's adult content.
Yeah.
This is not like, it's serious, right?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I'm in.
Well, just to clarify, I could be corrected, manga was a company which took adult paperback cartoons and made them into animation, movie really? Animation. Yeah. So they were a company. Okay. So manga wasn't actually a genre. Manga was a company.
Wow. Is it like when you said this the other day off the show when we were having food on our way back from that trip and you said people call UFC is a fighting style now.
Yeah.
They like when people say, well, what kind of fighting style do you do? Yeah. Do you do UFC?
Yeah.
People are like, oh, yeah. Yeah.
That makes sense. It's exactly like that. So people think UFC is like Wing Chun, like Taekwondo, like karate.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's not.
Wow. That's crazy, man.
MMA is the variant of the fighting style.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. So what are your thoughts on it then? So where do you place this then if you're going to hit it with a little film like score?
My thoughts on this is that this is amazing. I mean, I'm a big fan of anime and manga, kind of that style of animation that came about in the mid to late 90s. My only gripe is that it's a really, really short series. It's literally like they've taken a feature length film and just cut it into four pieces.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Which, I guess for the complexities of the artwork, I can kind of be forgiven.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just want to see more. Literally, as close to five as you can get, but not a five for me. Okay. Just based on how short it is.
All right.
But the storyline is very kind of like, it draws you in.
And can we get a season two, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's going to, well, it's a Netflix original. So I can see them probably committing to, I can have a couple of series.
Nice.
Yeah, right. It ties you in just like Attack of the Titans has caught you recently.
Yeah, so
Attack on Titans, rather.
Attack on Titan. Yeah, so I have no words for the way I felt when I first watched the first episode. I have never watched something that's so trippy and has so much unexplained.
Mm-hmm.
But it does hook me in because there's so many questions I have about it.
Yeah.
From the demeanor of these giant, naked, crotchless, weird creatures that are running around. Just from their demeanor and like
that are
the
constantly weird smiles
on their, some have smiles, some have like grimaces.
Yeah.
The way they behave, their origins. Yeah. I've just got to a point in the story where there's a very big strategic move, just the way which they explain the strategies of their armies and the way they work and the hierarchies. I feel like, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, tell me if I'm getting too excited, but I feel like this is kind of has got a Game of Thrones complexity to it in certain ways. And the way that you look at the military, how it breaks down, like that sort of stuff.
Do you know what? No disrespect to Game of Thrones. This story is better.
Yeah, of course.
It's much better than Game of Thrones. And I feel like that's sometimes the problem when you're dealing with massive cult followings and franchises. Some of them they get blown out of proportion, kind of thing. This storyline, if it was had the backing of the HBO and the platforms, and it would do so well, because what it is outside of the fact that it is an animation, the way the storyline is explained, you have to take it serious because of the nature of the way they explain the motivations of these titans, the motivation to stop these titans, the, like you said, the strategic moves and all. They could have just done a simple episode after episode after episode of these things just eating these people, but the backstory and explaining it and the character arcs and the development is so intense that you're thinking to yourself, you rarely see this in animation. To this, like, why? So they're assuming that the viewer that watches this kind of stuff has the intellectual ability to take on this kind of level of narrative.
Mm.
Not very kind of watered down, basic, episodical stuff.
Yeah. it's very deep.
Yeah.
It's very, very deep. So yeah, I think I'm almost at the end of the first season. Have I got another season to go?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I've got another season. And yeah, I was very impressed. I'm a bit weirded out still. Sometimes I pause it and I look at one of these Titans and I'm like, nah, it's the abnormals.
Yeah.
The way they run really creeps me out.
Yeah.
Like it almost looks like silly.
Yeah.
Some of the behavior of these Titans is silly, but at the same time, they've got like an arm hanging out of their mouth because they're just bitting it off.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. Anyway, Attack on Titans. But yeah, Castlevania, you like it. You're a fan of it. Right, let's tuck into a few bits that have been going on in the world. Did you know, Funk, that text, emails, and voicemails, I presume you send all of those, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever see them as sort of a legally binding thing, or would you call them trivial, those sorts of messages? Like, hey, how's it going? Hey, whatever. Yeah.
I didn't give that much thought into it, really.
So now, text, emails, and voicemails could soon be considered as valid wills by the courts after a radical overhaul of inheritance laws if approved by a judge. So basically what that means is if you have not left a will, a family can apply to have their intentions that were expressed in a message. Like, you know what, Funk? You really need this TV that I've got. If I say something like that, that can be, you can, when I die, you can be like, Marcus said I can have his TV.
Yeah.
Bro. Great idea.
Yeah.
I think in some ways, because we communicate a lot with it. But don't you find that there's a lot of things that you say in messages that could be misconstrued as actual serious conversation that you might say in jest?
Yeah, I mean, aside from that, you've got the huge problem which is put many a relationship on the ropes, and that's the problem of autocorrect. So let's say you're sending your will over to your nearest and dearest offspring, and autocorrect puts a few more zeros on the end.
so you're saying literally you just autocorrect, something turns from 10,000 to 100,000.
Yeah. Wow. Before you know it, you've kicked the bucket and your kids are having WWF battles because they feel that they're entitled to money that you haven't even got.
And what about like those casual conversations? Like, you might have a mate who's really well off and you go, oh, you're rich, give me all of your cash when you die. I'd say, yeah, of course, you can have it all, mate. Have the boat, have the car. You know what? Have the missus's half as well. You ain't have it. Yeah, I mean, you can have it all. And then you actually do die. And then someone walks up to court and says, well, he actually said that could happen, bro.
It could. There has to be some clause in this whereby when you put LOL at the end of the will, it kind of nullifies everything that you said before that.
Legally.
Yeah.
Kanye West tweeted that once, said that you can say anything you want to someone in a message as long as you put LOL at the end, and it's cool. Crazy. Well, apparently 40% of people die without making a will. So there's 40% of people whose messages could be misconstrued. Have you thought about writing a will yet? This is a bit grim. Have you thought about it yet? I'm not going to ask you for what cut I get or breakdown, but have you thought about this yet?
I have the other day. But I thought to myself, what are you going to do with my records?
Yeah. Is that one of your most prized possessions? That's one of my most prized possessions, you know?
Yeah.
Like, just the charm, the memories that they hold.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to be buried with my Nintendo Switch. So they're getting, just so I can get in a few more games of Zelda, man, in the afterlife. Get me?
I'll probably do something fucked up, like get buried with the remote control so they can't find it ever.
Oh, yes, that's great. Yes. Get buried with my GPS on and... oh, man. So, yeah, that's it. So this opens the door to people that haven't left the will, so... Be careful out there, you know.
Maybe that 40% didn't want a will.
Yeah, yeah. Or you know what? This actually can have quite a good effect. You could be in a situation where you're unwell and you're like, you know what? Let me pick up my phone and just record a will. Mm. Let me write a will on my phone and text it to somebody. So there you go.
On voice notes.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. But you will have a lot of people that are taking their partner's phones and writing messages with their dying hand and sending it to themselves.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, trust me. These things happen. Also, Funk, this is a true story, a very true story. I'm going to play a clip from an actual news report to explain what happened in this story.
We have a once in a lifetime situation that you'll probably never see or hear about again. There's a gentleman who works for a contracting company because this bank has been shut down, and I guess they're going to remodel it and somebody's going to put another bank in there. Well, this gentleman was an employee of the contracting company that was supposed to fix some of the equipment inside the ATM room. So he leaves his phone in his truck, he's installing a new lock on the door, and he gets locked inside the building, inside the little area where the ATM machine is. He can't get out, he can't call anybody because his phone is in his truck. So people are coming by using the ATM machine because it's still operational, and he's slipping notes through the ATM, through the receipt, where you would get your receipt, saying, please help, I'm stuck in the machine. And people are thinking it's a joke, but somebody took it serious and called us. We come out here, and sure enough, we can hear a little voice coming from the machine. So we're all thinking this is a joke. It's got to be a joke. But it was true. There was an employee that was there, and when he was installing the lock, it's a magnetic electronic lock, and it wasn't working correctly, and he couldn't get out. So the officers that got here are actually yelling to him through the ATM machine as if a little guy was stuck inside the machine. So we got a hold of him. He gave us a phone number to call his supervisor. His supervisor came through here. We actually had to kick the door in to get him out. So everybody's okay, but you'll never see this again in your life, that somebody's stuck in the ATM machine. It was just crazy.
Wow. Absolutely speechless.
So imagine you went over to your local cash point, yeah, put your card in, yeah, dialed a number in, dialed your little, you know, pin number in, got out some cash out, and then got a spare note saying, please help me, I'm stuck in here. Phone my boss on this number. What would you do in that situation?
Do you know what, yeah? He's lucky he wasn't stuck in the ATM, what we call over here, the cash machine.
Cash point.
Cash points that give you a £1.50 charge. Because yeah, it would have taken him a lot longer, yeah, to get out. No, yeah, one would have used it.
Yeah, yeah, no, 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 no one would, no have, one used have used it. It. Yeah, what, £1.50?
Because I just swerved them once.
Yeah.
I was just like, where's the nearest free cash machine?
Have you? Because I think we've wisened up to that. Because think of that. If you add up all of the 150s that you'd spend in your, yeah, life going to, yeah, those cash points, that's loads of cash.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So this poor fella's trapped in there.
So a gentleman was working on a cash point, went into a special room behind it and got locked in a room with a cash point and was screaming help. There are accounts of people saying that they heard, help me, I'm in here, I'm stuck in the machine.
Bruv. Do you know what springs to mind?
What?
More money, more problems. Surrounded by all that cash. I'd say, like, write out your story, but write out one word per note. So every time you write I, and he writes that on a £20 note.
Yeah.
£20 note. By the time you finish your story, that, like, see ya.
But yeah, well, I mean, what would you do in that situation, Funk?
If I was trapped, or if I was the customer?
Yeah.
Wait, which one?
What would you do in both situations? If you were trapped, what would you do?
If I was trapped, I'll see how long I could last.
I'd write a different note. If you want your £20, call this number. Do the right thing.
No, I'd write, if you want me to keep all the money from your account, let me out. Because they wouldn't know.
Yeah. And what would you do if you were on the other side of it? Help me. Help. I'm in here. I'm stuck. I'd giggle my ass off. I mean, that's a great trick.
Yeah.
Well done, HSBC. That's hilarious. Hey, guys, come and listen to this. No, serious. Yeah, sure you are. Look, they got a little voice in the machine. It's funny, man.
I felt like a doctor's the next day because I said, doctor, like, you know the drugs you gave me for the old cough? I think having some side effects, doc.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm hearing voices at the cash machine. Not anywhere else, just the cash machine.
Yeah, just the cash machine. That's crazy. Right. Onto something else, Funk. I got a picture which we're going to have up at howtokillanhour.com. Do you want to see the picture or do you want to hear the story?
Tell me the story.
So there was a man who is a 20-year-old man called Zach Mitchell.
Mm.
And working with animals, he works with bulls, cows, is very, very dangerous because they're big animals. And sometimes cows, not even just the bulls, which, you know, they're kind of the testosterone fueled, kind of slightly more aggressive of the breed. They're quite hard to handle, but also regular cows, like a regular, nice, mellow cow. If they move in a direction and move into you, they're not going to bounce off you. You're going to bounce off them.
They'll turn you into milkshake.
That's right. So Zach Mitchell had his hand kicked by a bull into a fence. So a bull kicked his hand into a fence and basically...
That bull's got some good accuracy.
Oh, I'm telling you.
It kicked his hand.
Yeah.
How big is a bull's foot?
They've got quite big hoofs.
Is it? What are we talking about?
Mayweather accuracy.
UK size 8? UK size 9?
UK size, but it's round though. It's a different shape, isn't it? It'll be like when a kid puts on your shoes and walks around. That's what it'll look like. You know, like when your kids put on your trainers and walk around. Do you know what I mean? Your girlfriend might do it too. Oh, look at how big your feet are. You know what I mean? That's what it'll be like. So this bull with its size 6 foot or whatever, 4 foot, Air Max on, kicked his hand to a fence. But what happened?
Yeah.
Is it ripped his thumb off?
So the bull's got sharp shoes on then.
Stilettos. Had its big gals on. It's Jimmy Choo's, yeah? And they placed his thumb in a cooler of ice to preserve it. That's what you should do. In fact, if you ever lose a limb, not a limb, like a digit.
Yeah.
Don't put it on ice by itself. Wrap it in something like a tea towel and then put it on the ice because you don't want the ice by itself to burn it.
Yeah.
Give it ice burn, mess it all up and kill the cells. But they put it in a cooler full of ice to preserve it, but the surgeons were unable to save it. So they came up with a solution to give him a thumb. So, you know, like when you're losing your hair, we're quite lucky. Our hairlines are strong. When there's a type of hair replacement therapy where they use hair from different parts of your body, apparently.
Mm.
Wouldn't know. What do you think they use to replace his thumb?
Jesus. Go on.
Zach Mitchell's thumb. Well, here's what Dr. Sean Nicklin said, because Mr. Zach Mitchell was quite reluctant about this. He goes, it's a bit of a crazy idea that the patients don't want to be get injured in another part of their body in order to save the thumb. If you don't have something to pinch against, it's all good having four fingers, but if you don't have a thumb and something to pinch, your hand loses a large amount of its function, which is true, like chopsticks, spoon, nah. It's not easy to hold things without a thumb.
Hitchhiking, no.
Exactly. A lot of people think balance and walking is going to be significantly affected after the procedure, which it generally isn't. That's a little clue for you. And basically, they transplanted his big toe onto his thumb, where his thumb was. I'm really impressed.
I'm just shaking my head.
And this is even more impressive. Before we move on, Sydney Eye Hospital completed the procedure, and Eye Hospital did the toe. So there you go. So they
took those doctors need an eye check because why would you use
because
the toe?
You can't because it's part of your body. And do you want to see the toe? What would you call it? A toenail? A toe?
Phonail.
A toe or a tum? What do you call it now? Is toe thumb?
Oh my word!
He does need a manicure. What does he get? What does he charge? What do they charge him for if he goes in for a manicure? But yeah, he's got a thumb. Toe, thumb.
I want to know, if he punches someone, is that a kick? Or is that...
Could he be a boxer? Or would that be cheating? Or he could only do kickboxing? He could actually be a kickboxer, by definition.
He's got MMA in one hand.
He could... He's got a UFC hand. His hand is UFC. He's got the UFC hand.
Oh my goodness.
But I mean, this is what I'm happy with. Surgery nowadays means that you can replace your, if I ever lose my thumb, I'm going to have my toe.
Toenail.
Yeah. Wow. But yeah, obviously he's going to be walking around now without a toenail. He's worried about balance and stuff. It's going to take him like a year to recover. If you want to see the picture of the toenail, check it out at howtokillanhour.com.
Very Dr. Frankensteinish.
I think, it looked like it was fresh out of surgery. That needs to tidy up. But yeah, a whole year of rehab he needs to before he can return to work. And he's probably going to have the best and biggest thumbs up out of all of his mates now. I mean, he's good and he gives you the thumbs up, you know he's good. Because that's going to be one heck of a tum.
That's like the thumbs and the whole the sporting events, the foam yeah. hands.
He won't need it, you know, like when there's music playing. Doom, doom, tch, doom, doom, tch. We were rocky. You don't need to do that, man. Wow, crazy. I was going to say, does he wear gloves or socks? Christmas. But yeah, man, no, shout out to you, Zach, man. I'm glad to hear that you managed to save your hand. Just so you know, today's episode of How to Kill an Hour is brought to you in collaboration with Microsoft and their new Surface Pro. The podcast you are listening to right now was in fact edited and uploaded via our top of the range Intel i7 Surface Pro, which is made for people who want to take their creativity on the go. It packs all of the punch of a high spec laptop, but check this, it's only 8.5 millimeters thick, ladies, and weighs less than a kilogram, probably lighter than the bag you put it in, or 1/10 the size of my KFC order, I'd say. All right, yeah. So it's lightweight. If you want to find out more about the Microsoft Surface Pro, you can click the link in our show description and you can check it out there. We've kind of spoken around the areas of like what the Microsoft Surface Pro does. But like I said, Microsoft done all this research to find out what creative people do.
Yeah.
And I got to have a look at some of this research that they collated. And, you know, I got lots of little bits of data that are quite interesting, yeah. Like, but I wanted to talk about being creative on the go as well as that, Funk. So a creative mobile professional, or as we like to call CMP, is what we are, right?
Mm-hmm.
How important to you is it that we are like creative on the go? Like, how important is that to you nowadays?
It's imperative.
Yeah.
Because when I think about it, this is very rarely that stationary for long periods of time, unless I'm obviously in a studio session, I'm actually building.
Yeah.
Aside from that, you're having meetings, you're having kind of, you're having to take correspondence, you're having to send correspondence. So you could be on the tube, you could be outside, you could be literally just leaving your house, you could be in your car, you're always on the move.
Yeah.
And I think that's just the nature, in general, that's the nature of London life. Outside of the creative mobile professional, I think a lot of Londoners like are moving very, very quickly.
Mm.
That's why we look miserable in the morning on the tube.
Too right, man. Too right. Yeah, for me, I'm the same, man. I just feel like I'm always doing something, like whether it's making a plan, sending an email, doing a note, reviewing, listening to some audio or something like that. I'm always working on the go.
Mm-hmm.
So people are the most creative at different times of the day and in different places. But where are you most creative, Funk?
In the shower.
Really?
Yeah. Not even on a cheesy tip of singing in the shower. I have a lot of brainstorms in the shower. As soon as I get to the armpits, yeah. That's where the new ideas begin to take fruition.
Really? So when you're scrubbing the armpit section.
Yeah.
That's where the new ideas come into fruition. Yeah. So that's when you're like, when you're going, there,
that's the
like,
eureka moment.
Okay.
The left armpit.
The left armpit only. Okay, cool. Interesting. Left armpit. Me's got to be when I'm like scratching, when I'm like shampooing. Is it weird that I use shampoo? Because I've got short hair.
Yeah.
A lot of people say that to me. What's wrong with using shampoo because I've got short hair? It's hair nonetheless. And I use conditioner.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
That's going too far.
Why? Why? That's when I'm creative, because I'm massaging my muscles, yeah? I'm massaging the skin around my head, I'm massaging my brain. That's when I'm creative. Putting that conditioner in. What is wrong with having something that keeps my hair soft and fluffy? Is that really weird? Is that too far?
That is odd.
Really? So what should I use then? A bar of soap? Shower gel?
Just use water.
Just water. Wait, is it allowed to be hot?
Is that
cold water?
Is that what you told the ladies? I can't see you tonight. I'm washing my hair.
Yes. It's and blow dry. No, don't blow dry. That's too far. So, Fung, I found some data about creativeness that Microsoft have. So I'm going to throw you some quick fire questions and we're going to roll off the data on the back of it. Who do you think's more creative, men or women?
Men.
Why? Because you are one.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's my chauvinism.
men are found to be 15% more likely to, on average, to feel creative earlier in the day between 5 and 9 a.m. Meanwhile, women surveyed were 19% more likely to feel creative in the evening between 5 and 11 p.m.
So who's more creative out of us then? Men or women?
Men, well, a smaller percentage of men are more creative in the morning and a slightly larger percentage of women are more creative in the evening.
Okay, so depending on the time of the day.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah. Who's more creative, old or young?
The kids.
I reckon it's the kids. But the facts say those aged between 18 to 34 years old were 31% more likely to, on average, to feel creative in the evening between 5 and 11 p.m. That's when the young people are feeling creative. Mm-hmm. However, those aged 55 are 31% more likely to feel creative first thing before 9 a.m. So the older you get, the more creative you are.
Yeah, that makes sense because
in the morning,
kids create a lot of mess in the morning. Yeah, yeah. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, the late night messiness. As a creative person, Funk, what would you say is your biggest bit of advice for those that want to stay creative out there?
Go to Amsterdam. How to stay creative? That's a good question. Because creativeness is so subject. I don't want to go down this profound route. Creativeness is, you have to be one with the universe.
Yeah.
We need some music when this is.
What, some worldly music?
Yeah, some worldly music.
I'll do some.
Some panpipes. I don't know. I think being creative is linked to fearlessness as well.
Yeah,
just being forthcoming with your ideas, seeing them through as well, because you can't be creative if the ideas just stay in your noggin, your head, and they literally don't touch the pad of the paper kind of thing. So you actively need to be not only thinking the ideas but developing them to be, in my estimations, seen as a creative.
Yeah.
So once you're doing that, once, twice, three times, I feel like it becomes habitual.
Yeah.
Then you become a creative.
Yeah. Yeah.
What an answer. The crowd go wild.
For me, I don't know. It's kind of like, for me, it's become, with age, it's become time. Creativeness for me takes time. Like, I used to rush my creative sometimes and I could do it, but now I feel like, even with How to Kill an Hour, like naming this show, I tried to rush it and I came up with some terrible names.
Go on, this even.
I got the list somewhere. I think I deleted the list. Really?
Yeah. The Bronzy Chit Chat Show.
Probably.
Bronzy Speaks to You Show.
It was,
Hey, I'm Marcus, Talk to Me Show.
All right, I found it.
Tech Some Time Out Show.
The Water Cooler Podcast.
Oh, gosh.
The Fill-In.
Fill-In.
Roll Out. Seriously, though. Work in Progress. Common Knowledge. Uncommon Sense. The Easy Problem. Say my name. Middle Bits. Join the Club. Back and Forth. That's not bad though. Back and Forth, is it?
Yeah.
The worst one though, Mind Sprinkles. And I really liked it. I was like, yo, what do you think, guys? Mind Sprinkles. You know, I've had every version of people going, Just a Chat. Technical Difficulty. I don't know, that was it.
Mind Sprinkles sounds like if there were such a thing as podcasts in the 70s.
Yeah.
That sounds very psychedelic.
Hey, but How to Kill an Hour is what it was, and hey, it went, man, from there.
I heard you've been developing that new show called Mind Sprinkles.
Exactly, man. But yeah, anyway, so yeah, that's how I like to stay creative. And plenty more. In fact, something inspired me to be creative. I actually got invited over to a event by Microsoft. And I got to see Sully Breaks and a gentleman called David William Herm, who wrote an app called Staffpad. Now, Sully Breaks is a spoken word poet. David William Herm is a composer, but he writes scores for films. Mm-hmm. And he wrote this app called StaffPad, which works with the Surface Pro, where you draw notes by hand onto what is music sheets on your tablet, and it actually turns them into real notes, and you can write compositions on it, which is really helpful. You can scribble them down. And they worked together to create something called an Ode to the Commute. And Silly Breaks is like a wicked spoken word pro. He's written a piece of spoken word that was so impressive that Will Smith saw it and invited him to lunch.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. And his words are really powerful. So him and David Herm got together. David created a composition out of the Sounds of London, mm-hmm. and Sully rapped over it at this event. And I was just like, wow, like I'd love to. It kind of got my kind of creative juices flowing. So what I, so, and we're going to put a link to that in the show description as well. But what I did in the next episode, actually, is I actually recorded some sounds of London, like on a day out. So you can kind of come for a day out with me in London, like an impromptu day out with some sounds, which you can check out in the next episode. But yeah, so that was just me getting creative. And that just came to me because I had a bit of time on my hands. I was thinking, what can I make creative that's audio? Mm. And I thought I'd knock that out. And you know what I mean? I like a little bit of sound recording as well. But yeah, that was it. Also, funny, you got a track out, man. You got a track out.
Coming out the 21st.
Yeah. Of?
July.
2017.
Yep. Club Culture.
Yeah.
Feel the Bassline featuring Keeds. And it's an ode to the ladies. The ladies getting ready kind of thing, and what they see from their perspective in the club, told from the perspective of a female MC called Keeds. She's doing really, really big things. She just recently finished a project with Levi's and Skepta at the V&A. But yeah, this track is a combination of house meets grime, attitudes, and whatnot. And it's kind of like, a collision of US and UK styles for the club. So that's coming out on my label, Houseology. So go get that. It's available on your iTunes, your Spotify, your Beatport, your TrackSource, the lot.
There you go. Thank you very much, Frank. And it's so funny. In Brussels, Funk said his name was Funk to someone. They went, Funk. And they thought you were, because the English guy. Yeah. He thought, he's like, hi, my name's Funk. He goes, Funk. Like no, Dutch. It's actually Funk. He goes, Funk. Oh, all right, mate. Yeah, cool. It's funny. Anyway, yeah, finally, thank you to Microsoft who sponsored this episode of How to Kill an Hour. This episode of How to Kill an Hour is brought to you in collaboration with them and their new Surface Pro. The podcast you were listening to now, in fact, was edited and uploaded via this top of the line Intel i7 Surface Pro, which is in my hands right now. And it's made for people who want to take their creativity on the go. The new Pro, this has 50% more battery life and performance than previous models, meaning you and your creativity can travel much further. There's plenty of ways to kill some time out there. Thank you for killing some time with us. Bless. I've been Marcus Bronzy.
I've been Funk Butcher.